Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
In every field, there are a few people whose contributions lay the foundation. They dare to speak the whole truth, to get out far ahead of the rest, and to accept whatever slings and arrows and career reductions may result. Of course, Victor and Wendy Zammit wear that crown in the field of afterlife studies, but it turns out that studying the afterlife was our introduction to learning what really is going on. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and our guest this week is the incomparable Dr. Bruce Lipton. He's one of my biggest heroes, and he is my own nominee as the foremost pioneer in our study of the entire greater reality. If it had not been for Bruce's extraordinary 2005 book, The Biology of Belief, my personal lights would still be out. I would not be talking to you today. Bruce Lipton is one of my biggest heroes, so it's a thrill for me to be talking with him again. Welcome, Bruce. I'm so glad you're here.
Roberta, I am so glad I'm here with you because I so love what you're doing, and it's so necessary for the world to get this new understanding because we're facing very extreme times. We're facing crises at every level of our organization as a civilization, and it's most important to recognize this. Crisis precipitates evolution. The reason is when you hit this crisis, you're going to have to do something different at this point.
Yes.
And that move to something different is a new way of living on this planet. And the crises are sort of like the service engine light on the dashboard of your car. The crises are saying, wake up, there's something wrong going on here. And it's not like fixing the crises is where the issue is. It's recognizing how we are really, really creating these crises and that we have to change our understanding of who we are and our role in the planet because we sort of have a belief with a Darwinian in theory that we're just accidental visitors here, that's like, oh, look, the genetic dice were taken, and look how you win this lottery with the dice of genes, and the idea is you're here because of genetic accidents, and so
right.
Enjoy, and not recognizing this is a completely misunderstanding of human existence on this planet, completely off base, and demeaning to humans who they really are. And so, Roberta, thank you, because you're waking up people. There are more to them than they read in the textbook.
Oh, my goodness, that's so true. But this is how Bruce started. This is a man who started believing that what he was being taught in medical school, believing what he, or in wherever you went, but you ended up teaching medical school, right, at the start?
Yes, I was a professor in a medical school and providing information which almost everybody out there has already been programmed with, information that is totally false, but it's like people are living their lives based on this information, and that number one is that our life is to a large degree pre-programmed in our genes, that our genes determine not just our physical structure, but behaviors and emotions, and therefore we are left with the belief that our biology is controlled by genes that we don't control, so that we're more or less victims of our heredity. And then we look at people and we say, whether their illness or whether their demeanor or behavior, and say, oh yeah, that's genetic, they're not responsible. But that makes us victims. Because when we believe that the control of our life and our behavior and biology is really predicated on genes and we don't control them, then by definition, we're powerless and own victim and then look at our lives as victims. And that science that I was teaching, which is called genetic determinism, the belief that genes determine a character,
right.
That science is completely wrong. And
totally
yet we
wrong.
Built a culture on this belief that, oh, you're a victim, cancer running in your family, you're a victim of genes. And it's like, there's no cancer gene. That's absolutely, that's like the belief.
Okay.
Let me just say a belief that most people have right now, and I'm going to tell you it's completely false. And the belief is genes turn on and genes turn off. And the fact is this, No, genes do not have the ability to turn on and turn off. Genes control nothing. And this is like, what do you mean genes control nothing? Because everybody's been programmed, genes control everything.
Oh, yeah.
Genes are blueprints, Roberta. They're just blueprints. They make the pieces of the body called proteins, which are like the Lego set, 100,000 different Lego parts that you can assemble into a liver cell, a bone cell, a skin cell, just by how you assemble these parts. These are the proteins. And DNA, genes, are blueprints to make the protein. And I go, why is that relevant? I go, it's a blueprint. So imagine you're in an architect's office and she's working on a blueprint and you lean over her shoulder and you ask her very kindly, you say, is your blueprint on or off? And then she'll look at you like, well, what are you, crazy? It's a blueprint. Yes. There's no on and off. I go, hey, exactly right. Genes do not have on and off. And the new science, which I happen to be, a pioneer of 47 years ago, I was working on this, revealed, no, it's the environment, and let me add this part, and when you get up to the level of humans, the environment and our perception of the environment
right. That
controls our genetics and our behavior and our life experiences. And I say, what's relevant in the bottom line conclusion, Roberta? Simple as this is that old story, genes control your life, you're a victim of heredity. New story, epigenetics, that's the name of the new science. It's environment and perception that control your life. And then since you are capable of affecting your environment and you're capable of altering your perception, then all of a sudden, guess what? We are not victims. We are masters of our biology and our life experiences. And that's a revolution because the healthcare crisis is based on belief.
Totally.
We can change that.
But put yourself into my mind. I spent decades studying the afterlife evidence. I had a very good understanding of death, the period after death, but I couldn't figure out how any of it fits with what's going on, what we see around us in the world. And then I picked up a book called The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles. And I read it. There also was a CD series or something. I drove listening to you over and over again, and you helped me get it, how it all fits together. And from then, it's been just a rush for me to more and more perfectly understand that everything is energy. And this is something which scientists know, but of course, they will not ever, ever admit that.
No. Scientists will admit it. Technology and people who own the economy will not admit it because there's a simple fact, and we'll talk about love and fear. And the idea is if I can keep you in fear, you will pay me for whatever that fear is about, whether it's a fear that you're going to sin and not go to heaven, or whether it's a fear you're going to get cancer. If I can invoke the fear, you will pay me to do that. So disempowering people with fear is the world situation, and these fears are unfounded, but since belief is turned into biology, then a belief of a fear will manifest a biology expressing complement to fear.
But if we back up a step and we ask what's truly going on, when we understand that everything is energy, that was the key insight that you really gave me or led me to that made me realize it all fits together perfectly. All that exists is this range of energy, and everything we have been learning as afterlife researchers fits together now with everything we think is going on here. And what you further have helped me understand is how powerful this programming is that we get when we're small children, and how it then affects our later life. And we all know people who are screwed up, and we don't quite know why. Maybe it's their genes, but it's not their genes. It's
no, and the biggest issue is most of them. Let's get to the crux of the whole issue here. Or I think I can get to it in this
okay.
point. Is simply this, is that number one, the new biology reveals that our genetics and our behaviors and emotions are linked into the chemistry of the blood. And the chemistry of the blood is controlled by the brain, which is the chemist, which adds hormones and things to adjust the chemistry of the blood. And then I say, bottom line, though, so I know the brain is adjusting the chemistry of the blood, but what chemistry does it use? Or what, how does it know what chemistry to release? And I say, it's based on the mind. And the significance is this, just for example, if we're sitting here and our eyes are closed and we open our eyes and we see someone we love, the mind expresses an interpretation of love. And I go, yeah, but what does that represent body-wise? I go, ah, in love, chemicals are released that complement the feeling of love. Number one, dopamine, pleasure. Yes, I'm in love. It's pleasure. Oxytocin is released by the brain when love is the picture. And I go, yeah, that's bonding with the source of that love. Vasopressin is released when you're in love, and that makes you physically more attractive. And growth hormone is released, which enhances your health and your vitality. And then I say, yeah. So when a person's mind is in love, the brain is releasing chemistry that complements love, which is chemistry that enhances your vitality, your joy, your energy. Life is beautiful. You're healthy. You glow. Oh, look, they're in love. See how they glow. It's like this is a biological consequence of a mind.
Yes.
Mind translating a belief into chemistry. And then I said, so let's compare it with something opposite so you can see what the difference is. And I say, same people sitting there open their eyes, but rather than seeing someone they love, they see something that scares them. Well, fear. I go, oh, well, fear. All those chemicals that were released by love, they're not going to be released during fear. The chemicals of fear include stress hormones, inflammatory agents that affect the immune system. And I go, and agents that affect your thinking processes, everything. It alters your biology. And I say, because the chemistry that's released interpreting fear by the brain, that chemistry shuts down the growth in the immune system, gets us ready for fight or flight, and changes the whole biology. And I go, well, what changed it? I said, the picture in the mind changed it. I go, oh.
Right.
And so I said, yeah, but that's the nature of how it works. We look at the world. And I said, through the new science called epigenetics, the environment, and more specifically, our perception of the environment, is translated by the body into chemistry that complements that environment or our perception of that environment so that we are in harmony with the world. If you have a reason to be in fear, the biology is prepared now to run in fear, which is fight or flight. Or if you look at the environment and it's peaceful and loving and wonderful, then you're given the kinds of chemistry in the blood that encourages the growth and health and maintenance of the body and increased vitality. And I go, yeah. So in other words, your biology is a secondary consequence of what's in your mind. And then I say, yeah. And then I said, but that's where the issue comes from, and the issue is this. The mind. Oh, there's a mind, a single mind. I go, no. This is the problem creator. Is there actually two minds? They work together, but they're not the same. They don't do the same job, and they learn in different ways. So, and this is where problems come from when you think of a mind. When I say, no, there are two minds, though they work together, they're different in their function and learning. And I go, okay, so let's say, what are the two minds? So I say, well, there's the subconscious mind and the conscious mind. I go, the subconscious mind, the name means below consciousness, meaning it engages the functions such as heart rate, breathing rate, temperature of the body, but it also does anything that has programs in it. So walking is subconscious mind. Driving a car after you learn how to do it, you don't need to, once you learn it, it's a habit. So subconscious minds are stimulus, response, and habits. That's all they are. And they're great. It's subconscious minds, a lot of people think it's evil because a lot of garbage comes out of it. And it's like, no, no. The mind itself is a fantastic device. I mean, think about the fact of this. You learn how to walk once. You never had to relearn how to get it, do it again. You could be 60, 70, 80, 90 years old. Hey, you learned when you were, what, one something, and it's still there because it's a program. So programs are good, or some programs can be bad. So the program is not the mind is just a mechanism, and it's great. So subconscious mind helps us by learning things so we don't have to repeat them again, and learning. We can do them by habit. Okay.
And I want to make sure people understand what epigenetics is, because we passed over that, and that's a big word. So, but please.
Oh, yeah. I'll come right back to it, because we'll come back to it. Let me finish the other mind. So I say,
okay.
The subconscious mind is the habit mind, and it's very good, because if your habits are good, like walking, driving, working, talking, whatever, these are good, then fine. These are habits, and this is subconscious, okay? And then I say, and there's conscious mind. I go, what's different? I say, conscious mind is where you are, you as an identity, you as a spirit, a source, Who are you as a unique entity? That's lodged in the conscious mind. So you are like an element in this conscious mind. And I go, what's different about it? I say, it's not a habit mind. It's a creative mind. The habit mind is stimulus response. This stimulus, make this response. There's no thinking, just habit like that, okay? Creative mind is thinking. You can imagine. You can create pictures. You can make visions. You can have a desire, what you want from your life. I say, good, this is all creative. And I say, conscious mind, you are that conscious creative mind. And then I go, okay, so I could run my life with my conscious mind, which has wishes and desires. I go, actually, the one time you did that in your life without knowing what was going on is when you fell in love with somebody. And I say, what was the behavior, what was the life experience like when that happened? I say, well, right up until that moment, life could have been crappy. Then you meet this person, and all of a sudden the next day, it's like, wow, life is so great.
Oh,
life
yes.
is beautiful, heaven on earth. Oh, my God, life is wonderful. I go, okay, that part where life was beautiful, wonderful, and everything worked just right, that was operating your system with a conscious mind. Okay?
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
say, what about the subconscious mind? Well, I say, it's got programs and behaviors in it. I say, what programmed the subconscious mind? Where did the fundamental programs come from? The first 7 years of your life, the subconscious mind was on record like a video recorder. And it recorded behaviors of everyone, your mother, your father, your siblings, your community. And I say, what was it doing that for? And the answer was, you have to understand how to behave to be a member of a family and a community. And there's thousands and thousands of behavioral things that, with nuances that are, you know, I mean, how a father talks to a child is not how it talks to the mother and father, or how it talks to another adult, or how it even talks to a policeman. And yet, a child will learn in every situation the behavior required by what? Observing. So the fundamental fact is this, that subconscious are habits that we download how to become a functional member of our society. And the fundamental programs came from observing other people. So the behaviors in our subconscious mind were actually recordings of other people's behaviors. And so I say, okay, fine.
So when your wife tells you that you're just like your father, she's probably right, because that's what you learned, right, when you were very
exactly.
small.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So let's put this in context of where the problem comes from, and then all of a sudden the resolution is beautiful. And the problem is this. The conscious mind is you with wishes and desires to have a healthy, happy, loving life, a great job. I don't care. All those wishes that you want. I say that's conscious mind. And that's like you are the driver. You have your hands on the wheel. The subconscious mind is the habit mind. And I go, well, what's interesting is this. When the conscious mind is paying attention, it's driving the vehicle according to wishes and desires as the directions. But I say, if the conscious mind is thinking, definition is not paying attention to what's going on. So, you know, I say, hey, Roberta, what are you doing on Sunday at 2 o'clock? If you're going to answer that question, the answer isn't outside anywhere. The answer is inside your head. So you have to go inside your head to get the answer. I say, ah, well, then the conscious mind for that moment of thinking of where, you know, what am I doing on Sunday, is gone inside the head. And I say, oh, yeah, well, it was driving the car, but now it has to go inside the head and think. And I say, guess what? The default behavior kicks in, and that's subconscious. Whatever habits, if you're driving the car, the subconscious knows how to drive the car. You practice, you learn. It's a habit how to drive the car. If you're walking and you have a thought, it doesn't mean just because your mind went inside, you stop walking, because the habit mind is the default, so the autopilot. So there's two minds, pilot, autopilot. Pilot, you put your hands on the wheel, drive it toward wishes and desires. Autopilot goes toward program. Whatever the program is, that gives the chance for the mind to go inside, look for answers. Well, whatever else is going on outside is still going on. So it's a great plan. Now, here's the problem. In the first 7 years where we've been programmed by recording other people's behaviors, the vast majority of the programs are disempowering, self-sabotaging, and limiting behaviors. And so that says when we are thinking, our mind is in thought, and our behavior is shifted automatically to autopilot, subconscious, the programs that's going to play, the majority of those are negative and not supporting. I go, but then I'd be aware that I was sabotaging myself. I say, no.
Oh, no.
Stop for a second. Why are you playing autopilot? And the answer is, because my mind was thinking. And I go, Yes, and therefore when it was thinking, it did not see the behavior that was being played on autopilot. And then now the last piece of the puzzle, which hurts, science has revealed that 95% of the day we are thinking.
Right.
And
right.
That means 95% of the day we are playing programs from autopilot that we don't see. And then it leads to this story that I give in my lectures, and most people laugh. And what's significant is that almost everybody's experienced this, and it goes like this. I'm sure you had a friend that you knew your friend's behavior very, very well. And you happen to know your friend's parent. And one day you see that your friend has the exact same behavior as their parent. You know, this excites you, so you want to tell your friend. You go, hey, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And
oh,
then you back
no.
away from Bill. Because Bill's going to go, how can you compare me to my dad? And everyone laughs, and I say, okay, so you want to know, that's the most profound story of the whole conversation we just had. And I say, why is it profound? Because everyone else can see that Bill's behavior is like his dad. The only one who doesn't see it is Bill.
I say,
what is the meaning of that? And the meaning is simply this. 95% of the day, we are playing the programs because we are thinking, and we don't see the programs. And so the programs are going to be like Bill. He got his programming from his dad. 95% of the day, he's engaging his dad's behavior, but he's the one that doesn't see it because the reason he's playing it is because the mind was busy. And then I say, well, what's the problem? I say, because we are all living under the assumption that we are moving in our life toward our wishes and desires. This is what we want. And then we have trouble getting there. And we find that life is always seeming to throw a monkey wrench. It's not always getting there.
No.
And then we feel like we're victims because I know we want to go to this destination. That's my wish and desire. And I say, but we're not getting there. So the universe is against me. I'm a victim of universe. And
right.
I go, clear it up right now, and here's what it is. The universe is not in your way. What's in your way is 95% of the day, you are not the person you think you are in your conscious mind, which is your spiritual essence, who you are. You are 95% of the day program that you got from other people. And
yes.
Most of it has no service to you except disempower you and sabotage you. And since it's invisible, and that's the problem, then when things don't work out, we're left with, consciously, I wanted to succeed, and it didn't work, so it's not me. And now recognizing, oh, my God, yes, when I was conscious, I did go toward my success 5% of the time. And
yeah.
95% of the time, my own unconscious behavior sabotaged me. And then I say, wow, well, what's the relevance? And the relevance is, when you stop playing subconscious behaviors and you driving the vehicle with your hands on the wheel, conscious mind, what was life like? And the answer is, well, if you ever experienced what I call the honeymoon effect, when you first fell in love, and the days following that were heaven on earth and joy and pleasure and energy and excitement and everything, I go, that's what it's like when you're driving the vehicle without the program.
Yes, wow.
And when the program cuts in, it's called regular life.
Yeah, and too often that regular life is limited by things we learned in childhood that aren't really true. But that's the
limitation of those programs. Yeah. That's why I said disempower because or limiting your power because you can't do that. And it's like, well, if you believe you can't do it, and your belief is controlling. You see, where's the belief come in? We talked about that. I said, what's the picture in your mind? If you have a belief, you cannot do X in your mind. And X is something you have to do, and your mind says you can't do it. The chemistry released by the picture of can't doing it will prevent you from doing it. So basically, it's not that you can't do things, it's only your belief you can't do things.
Yes, we have a lot more to talk about. I just want to say quickly, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Liberating Jesus and My Thomas. You can learn about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, let's just mention what epigenetics is. When I sort of learned this from you, I started going around telling my scientist friends, Lamarck was right. And, of course, they thought that was a terrible thing to say. I should mention to people who don't know that Lamarck had the alternative theory to Darwin's. And his theory was right. He believed that our life experiences affected the way our cells express the genes or maybe changed the genes themselves. There's evidence of that. And he died in penury in an insane asylum.
Totally poor and thrown into a pauper's grave.
Yes,
and he was the actual founder of the theory of evolution.
Yes, and his was the right one, and Darwin led us on 100 years of nonsense. Sorry, I just had to say
that. Well, yeah, because it was disempowerment. It says your life is controlled by heredity, and life is a struggle for survival. The image of evolution is a struggle for survival with competition for fitness.
Law, right. Yes, that's right.
Well, that's a belief. If it becomes a scientific belief, which it did, then we since we use science to shape our lives, then guess what? We end up in a world, you know, a couple hundred years after Darwin is based on what? A struggle for survival with competition. To the game, today 1% of the population has got the competition beat so much that they own more than the rest of the population. So it's like, that's the full, you're playing out the Darwin game here, which struggle, violence, war, competition. When it turns out, that theory of evolution was totally incorrect. Lamarck's theory of living in harmony with the environment is the theory. And now we know that's true because our genetics are controlled by the environment, not Darwin's. It wasn't Darwin. It's Darwin's followers. Let me straighten that out.
Okay.
Not Darwin. It's Darwin's followers have bought into the belief that we're genetic automatons, and Lamarck's followers recognize, no, we are integral part of nature and connected to everything in nature and are supposed to be in harmony with it, that nature, remember, was called the garden, and by the term garden, it's not a battleground. A garden is this place of total cooperation. That's what makes garden, cooperation. Competition makes battleground. Darwinian theory, competition. Lamarck theory, cooperation. And then everybody says, well, he was wrong because we believed in genes controlling life. And now we get back to the definition that we're going to look at and say, what's the difference between genetics and epigenetics? And the answer is this. Let's say, when I say genetic control, I'm literally saying control by genes. That's our current belief. We're under genetic control. We're under the control of genes. And I go, okay. And I say, what's the new science? I say epigenetic control. Well, you say, that almost sounds exactly the same. And I go, yeah, but epi means above. So I say, what does the new science epigenetic control mean? Control above the genes.
Right.
We now recognize the control is not in the genes, the control is in the environment and our perception. And therefore, being capable of changing our environment and changing our perceptions, then we're not victims of forces outside of us. We are the controlling force.
Yes.
And this empowerment needs to be offered to the public who have believed they're victims. And since belief is translated as biology, if I believe I'm a victim, if I believe I'm going to have cancer, I can have cancer. Because my belief is going to turn into chemistry that will make the image of cancer become real. And that turns out this is exactly what it's all about.
Hope people are understanding that this is the power you have. Your mind is more powerful than you could possibly imagine. It is part, we know literally, of the mind that brings forth the universe continuously. And so you can very well give yourself cancer and you can very well get rid of it with your mind. Because that's what
absolutely. And it doesn't take years for changes. Changes can occur virtually instantaneous. That's why it's called a spontaneous remission. How fast did it occur? One of my favorite books is by a dear friend of mine, Anita Morjani. Her book is Dying to Be Me. Are you familiar with this one, Roberta?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and she had 4 years of cancer, was the last week of her life on machine support because her systems have failed. She was emaciated to the extent that the cancer lumps were sticking out of her body, and she had an out-of-body experience and started to realize her real identity was the energy in the field and that her body was connected to that, but she and her body were not the same. And when she understood that the disharmony in her life that was expressed as disharmony in her cells was the cause of the cancer, when she understood that this was a psychological disharmony and came back from that out-of-body experience, within days, the cancer was gone.
Yeah.
Completely. She came back from the, her oncologist said nobody comes back from this coma at the end of life, and she came back and the cancer disappeared. What? Changing the energy of who she is and her belief and attitudes, and she came back from total death, according to her oncologist. So it's a recognition that, to me, she's like the poster child of biology belief. Here she is on a machine, keeping her alive, gets out of body long enough to see, oh my God, my mind and the conflicts and the programming conflicts that have thrown disharmony into my life have led to my dis-ease. And by resolving this understanding, she came back with a new mindset. And guess what? That mindset was a healthy mindset, and spontaneous in that sense of just a few days, 4 years of cancer disappeared.
Yes, that's a wonderful story. But people need to understand that this happens all the time. This happens a lot, that people have horrible diseases and they get rid of them. I hear these stories just in the course of my work, because people say, guess what happened to me or to my brother or whatever. But because the scientific community is still so dogma bound and we just will not acknowledge that there's anything going on.
No, it's not the scientific community, it's the medical community. The scientific community has no money and no advertising and nobody knows what they're doing because it's done someplace in a laboratory. But the medical community has all the advertising, all the drugs, all the things on television, all the news. They own the media. Which story are you going to hear? You're going to hear of your victimization. You're going to hear stories of how the pharmaceutical company is going to heal you. And I say, well, what if we tell Buddy Roberta's story about how you can do it with your mind? And I go, okay, let's see this as a business consequence for the pharmaceutical industry. A, we get them to believe they're victims, they buy all the drugs. B, they learn that they are powerful and they can control their health with their mind, and I sell them no drugs. Business model says, oh my goodness, well, forget the latter one. That's not going to help us at all.
Yeah, but part of the business is the business of science. In the early part of the 20th century, we started to get very good communications from the dead. And the problem was, they were being documented by researchers. This was serious stuff.
1925 is when quantum physics came in. So essentially, the conventional physicists of the day, all of them, were Newtonian physicists, which discounted the energy realm as relevant to the material realm, which meant the idea of energy, vital forces, spirit. They didn't say whether it existed or not. They just said they would have no influence over the physical realm, so there's no reason to study them.
Right.
And in fact, it's not relevant because only physical things affect the physical realm, hence the pharmaceutical industry comes from that. And they dispensed with it because they said they could understand how life works, that was their intention, without invoking any spirituality. So when they got to the genes and started to recognize, oh my God, it's a machine, then all of a sudden, who needs spirituality in their world?
Yeah.
So they discounted any relevance to it because they said, no, I can explain life with genes controlling it. And now the beautiful part, of course, is with the new science of epigenetics, that whole belief system was wrong. So
it's the scientific gatekeepers that have been enforcing this primarily. We've got the peer-reviewed journals, the university departments. Within the last decade, I've been told that in physics departments, students were starting to study physics. We're told, if you want to study any of this stuff over here, don't even bother to get a degree because you'll never find a job. That's where physics was as recently as a decade ago.
Just while you brought that up, Roberta, let me just tell a story from 1895 about physics, right? In 1895, the physicist said, look, we understand Newtonian physics, and we can explain everything about the universe using Newtonian physics, and therefore, we don't need any more students in physics because all the rest of it is just adding the measurements. We have all
That's
the
right.
understanding.
That's a great
so they
story.
Were telling people
yeah.
in 1895, no more physics, and guess what? That was the day where the world changed, really, 1895, when
totally.
They started to find there were things that were not explainable by Newtonian physics, and that led to quantum physics. But up until quantum physics, everybody was Newtonian, so they had no place in their scientific thinking to include the invisible realm as relevant. It was only when quantum physics came in, and I love it because they knew exactly what it meant in 1930, and we let go of the meaning that they said exactly what it meant in 1930, because in 1930, physicists like Eddington, Sir Eddington, said exactly this. He said that rather than looking like a fine-tuned machine, the universe is more a consequence of thought. There are other people that all the same thing. It says rather than a machine, it's a thought. Right? That thought has been left out of the equation, and consciousness is really the source of everything. That's
just the source
fundamental
of everything.
Root quantum physics from 1930. But then the problem is, then you mix the two things. A, every physicist up to that moment was Newtonian. B, you yeah. tell them one day they wake up and you say, well, you know, everything you believe about the world might not be exactly right. And then you tell them about the nature of consciousness. They're not even into consciousness. But they couldn't argue about the nature of quantum mechanics at the level of an atom and its structure. So what did they do? By definition, of they left out, like, Eddington's work on consciousness.
Right.
And then what they ended up doing was, when they left it out, was saying thought has nothing to do with it. That quantum physics only has to do with atoms and nothing bigger than atoms. And I say, yeah, but why is that relevant? They said, because today we know that consciousness thought is exactly what they originally said, that consciousness is creating it. And if our consciousness is incorrect, the creations that come from that are not in harmony with life. And that, all of a sudden I say, then look at the world. The world we're creating with our consciousness is on the edge of an extinction.
Here's the problem. We still to this day have millions and millions of dollars being spent on trying to find a source of human consciousness in the brain. The brain, which is nothing more than a two-way radio in the head of a meat robot, if that. That's where we are now. The scientists still are enforcing this ridiculous dogma without even thinking about the fact, which is the dogma's materialism, basically, as you point out. We'll just study what's material. You guys study the rest. But since nothing is material, they have literally been on a detour that's almost 100 years long now, and all the science that has, you know, the main core science that's been done in the last 100 years is going to have to be redone. So what good is the dogma to them? Why pursue a belief that is wrong instead of pursuing the truth?
Because the bottom line was, where's the money? Look, I was a scientist. You want to know? I did some fabulous research. Yeah, but where did I get the money to do the research?
Well,
in those days, it was mainly from government grants.
You're my hero. I don't want you to be cynical.
I'm not cynical because I'm also recognizing this. I'm not the only guy out there talking this way now, that there are scientists waking up to the reality that we are in a crisis now, and it's a crisis of human behavior, and it's a crisis of understanding who and what we are and why we're here. And that is then all of a sudden, why is this relevant? Because the crises are hitting us in the face that the old belief systems are the cause of today's crisis. And therefore, the only way out of the crisis is to update and change the belief system. So epigenetics is like a revolution, because while the conventional
right.
world of people out in the public have not really fully understood the consequences of epigenetics, it's at leading edge. There's like a revolution, because there are scientists like myself that are going, wait a minute, this is behavior related genetics. And I go, yeah, this is basically what it's all about. And yet, where does money come from for people to do research? From drug companies. And the reality is this: you want your grant, then you do research that in any way supports the drug company, and then they give you more money. So I'm saying,
Lord.
Are we living in the science world that I got into science back in the 60s? And I said, why did I get into biology? I had no idea, actually, because there was no job career thing that was like, so what are you going to be, a biology teacher? I just love biology. So I did it because of the love of biology. But within 20 years, the pharmaceutical industry became a career choice. And I said, well, how do you get to be a career? You know, how do you get that? You study biology. And all of a sudden, people became biologists. Not to understand the nature of the universe, because they got to be biologists because it was a stepping stone into the career track of the pharmaceutical industry, which is the biggest industry. So is my science today biased? And I go, yes, but what else is happening? Regardless of its bias, it's creating the crises that are causing the new beliefs come into play, because we cannot continue living by the old beliefs. So the good news is in the bad news. Yes, I'm not pessimistic about it. The bad news is good for me. Why? Because it's what's going to cause us to say, we cannot do it this way anymore. We must change the way we're living.
Yes.
And it's going to change the career you're in, because the most important part of the change of way we're living is when we introduce quantum physics, all of a sudden the concept of spirituality can become a scientific endeavor, because the words in physics are called field. And I say, what's the definition of field? Invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. And I say, interesting, the word spirit can be defined as invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. So you say, well, I'm going to be a scientist, I'm going to call it field. And I say, fine, then I'll be old-fashioned and I'll say spirit. But guess what? We're still talking about invisible forces shaping the physical world. And once we start to own that, people know who they are. And they're going to let go of this victim and learn that each of us is a creator. And the issue is, but we create from our mind. And if we start to recognize, oh my God, a lot of the programming was so defective that we end up creating this. When we also, as I said, when we fell in love and we didn't play the programs, we created heaven. I go, oh, that's the destination of the planet. That's where we're going to go.
Yes, and that's something I really want to talk to you about, so I'm going to have you back because we're coming near the end of our time. But that's a whole other major discussion. I just want to give a teaser for it, and then we will talk about this again very soon. One of the things that is astonishing to me is, and it shouldn't be, is that all the people who are separately, have been separately working in these fields, which are not even that closely related, are all coming to the same conclusion, which is that we now must unite to save the world from itself, save people from themselves, and basically raise our consciousness, raise the consciousness of the whole planet. And this is something that has been a project of people we used to think were dead for almost 100 years. And it really intensified at about the time that we were exploding bombs in anger, almost 70 years ago. It's no coincidence that Bruce and I are just about the right age to have come in directly to try to address that. And now he is working in the same field, basically, that I'm coming to, which is how to save humanity from itself, how to raise our consciousness rapidly enough that we will avoid the alternative that we're told is coming in about 200 years, which is a climactic war which will then cause civilization to altogether be extinguished. And on that happy note...
let me just acknowledge this simple fact. You ready?
Yes.
And we talked about the consequence of a body being in what is called a terminal illness and then expressing what is called a spontaneous remission.
Right.
The fact is that since consciousness, as recognized by quantum physics, is really the creator of the world and universe in which we live, then the Earth might be, you might say, oh my God, the Earth is in terminal illness. And I go, yeah. And guess what? It can have a spontaneous remission when enough people change their consciousness. It'll be the same as healing cancer instantly. The Earth will return back to harmony, because it's our disharmony that is wreaking disharmony in the environment around us. We resolve our disharmony in ourselves, and the world around us will also come into harmony.
This is the topic of my new book, which will be The Fun of Growing Forever. It will come out in the summer. And for certain, and I think you've written on the same topic, we really have to stop talking, but I'm looking forward tremendously to having this discussion with you, because I know this is where your heart is now, and it's where my heart is as well. But the book is called The Biology of Belief. If you haven't read it, please read it, because as far as I'm concerned, it's seminal in this whole field. And there are a bunch of YouTube. I spent my day watching YouTubes of Bruce. There are a bunch of them. I recommend them. The last one I watched was The Biology of Belief, The Most Important Hour of Your Life. It was done in 2012, and I just loved it to pieces. But meanwhile, I have to say, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really get what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, of course, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on webtalkradio.net and also on iTunes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Liberating Jesus, and My Thomas. And you'll find details about all my books and my blog as well at robertagrimes.com. Now, next week, our guests for the second time this spring will be Gary and Rhonda Schwartz. They'll be back together to let us peek inside the door to the laboratory where they're doing pioneering work in electronic communication with the dead. Of course, it was Gary Schwartz who coined the term soul phone. Now, he and his team are working on beginning to make the soul phone a reality. So please join us. This week, we've been talking with the incomparable scientist and scholar and great human being, Dr. Bruce Lipton. His extraordinary book is The Biology of Belief. It's a decade old. Get it while it's hot. If you haven't yet read it, please read it now. His book answered so many of my questions and opened so many new areas of study for me that I'm serious when I say that if he hadn't written The Biology of Belief, I could not have written The Fun of Dying or the books that followed it. So please give yourself the gift of reading it now and begin to transform your own life. And Bruce, what's your website? Is it brucelipton.com?
Very simple, very much, and thank you. And I really want people to understand, on that website, there's a lot of information that we talked about that you could indulge yourself free to download tremendous amount of information. And it's necessary because knowledge is power,
and what
we need is knowledge of self right now.
My dear friends, if you're listening to us today, then yes, Bruce is a pioneer, but you're also a pioneer. The study of consciousness-based physics and the greater reality in which we live turns out to be the genuine science that is going to dominate the second half of this century. And yet, if you talk about it now, people are going to look at you funny, but just ignore them. They're wrong, and you are right. Join Bruce and me in the joyous pursuit of what is true, no matter what the cost, and eventually we're all going to have the satisfaction of watching the dawning of the 22nd century from the bleacher seats, yes, but we're going to be able to watch knowing that it is our work that has created this enlightened and beautiful new reality into which our great-great-grandchildren will be born. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.